Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair game for some 30 years now?
I hate to think of that, but yes.
Wow, it's been a long time, and this guy knows his stuff. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on our Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet at @WAMCVoxPop or even email VoxPop@WAMC.org. But we do love your calls on this, a call-in program, 1-800-348-2551. Mr. Fricke, how are you, buddy?
Good, good. How about you?
How's business?
It's pretty good. We're staying very busy.
Yeah, and soon it'll be winterization time.
Well, you know, somebody was saying that the other day, that winter is around the corner. I said, you got to be kidding me.
I've seen leaves turn.
I know. I did, too. I was on the road the other day, took my girls out to college, and there were various trees turning color already, which maybe that's normal. I don't know.
Frightening.
At this time of year, yeah.
So it seems like summer bypassed us, except for a couple of good hot weeks there.
I think people's mindset is like that, because it never got super hot and humid and long spells, so it just kind of glided by.
Well, we have plenty to talk about, and the first thing, before we get to our first call, educate me. What the heck is a head gasket, and why does it cost so much to fix?
Yeah. Such a small item.
Yeah.
And if you've seen one, hanging up in a package somewhere or out on your workbench, it's just a big flat piece of material. There's some metal in it. There's some other materials in there, and it basically makes the seal between the cylinder head of your engine and the engine block, and it is an absolutely critical seal.
And not an expensive part.
Not at all, compared to the amount of time that it takes to change it if you need to replace it. But it's sealing out, it's keeping the coolant from getting into the combustion chamber. It's keeping the oil from getting into the coolant and to the combustion chamber, and sealing up very high cylinder pressures. So it's a very critical part.
Okay, so if it is so critical and the part itself is not ridiculously expensive, why then the massive amount of labor to change them? Should they not make them much easier to change?
Well, they basically hold the two major components of your engine together. So to take those cylinder heads off has gotten extremely time consuming. In the early years, it wasn't as big a deal as it is now. You had cam chains or timing chains that were under the head. So it was a very relatively simple task, but now there's overhead cams, either driven by chains or belts. There's a lot of stuff up there now moving, and it can be a massive job on some cars.
And what are the telltale signs? I know the telltale signs.
Yeah.
However, for those who don't know, what are the telltale signs that your head gasket might be going, and what can you do to forestall the expensive inevitable?
Yeah. In some cases, it's external coolant leaking. Coolant leaks outside of the engine, and it drips on the ground. Mm. And if it's traced to the cylinder head gasket, believe it or not, Subaru had a lot of problems with head gasket leaks in the early years. And they had a special product that the dealerships sell, and it's basically, they call it a conditioner. It's kind of a very mild stop leak. And it was designed to stop these external leaks, and the stuff is remarkable, and it works great within reason. If it can't stop the leak, then it's engine teardown time.
Now, there are products out there that will stop leaks, but if you overuse them, then you're also in trouble, right?
They can plug up things, plug up coolant passages, cause hot spots, create overheating, plug your heater up. So, you can't just pour a bunch of that stuff in there.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Don in Slingerlands. Don, you're first.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2012 Dodge Charger that I absolutely love, with one exception. I've taken it back to the dealer a couple of times because there is what I sense is like a small chugging in the transmission. And at least a few times when I have been slowing down to almost nothing, It would sort of like drop in, and I felt like I was getting hit from behind very slightly, but it was like a nudge forward. And I've taken it back to them a lot. Well, a lot, by a lot, I mean three times, I guess, in the course of 45,000 miles, which is on the car now. It's almost 3 years old. Anyway, the folks at the dealership tell me it's a software patch issue. It's not a mechanical issue. There's not a recall on it. There isn't anything they can do about it. Should I find a different dealer?
Yeah, that's a good question you have there, because automatic transmissions today are operated differently than they were 30 years ago, even 20 years ago. In this case, there is a computer that is kind of in charge of the shift points. And
right, and this is one of the new 8-speed transmissions or something. It's an automatic.
Yeah, there's a lot of gear ratios in there. In the early years, you had 2 speeds. Then it went to 3, and then it went to 4, 5, 6, and 8. So what that transmission is doing is it's upshifting and downshifting depending on the demand you're putting on it, the load, the hills, the curves, the acceleration, and deceleration. And that's something automatics never did. But now they realize that you are slowing down. And when they do that, they will downshift themselves, similar to when you had a manual transmission in your pickup truck or car.
Sure.
Or a heavy truck, you'll shift down. So what you're feeling is when you're slowing down to a stop, the computer is watching the vehicle speed. It's watching your brake pedal, telling it if you're on the brakes or not. And knowing that you're decelerating, it's bringing the gears down, and you're feeling the nudge. And the dealer, I think, is absolutely right in that it's probably a characteristic of how that transmission operates in that vehicle. And if there are software changes, they have to be provided by the factory, in your case, the Chrysler Corporation, that allows the dealers to go in there and change things around. So you could get a second opinion. For sure, and just see if there's anything else another dealer might spot. But I think you're okay, basically.
Well, what bothers me about it is that you can feel it on the acceleration a little bit, almost as though it had like dirty fuel injectors. You know, although I don't even know if the car's fuel injected. Quite frankly, I don't know. But it'll hesitate up, and it sometimes slows down. And if they're telling me it's a software thing and there's no patch, there's no solution. It's just, you know, should I get another car?
Well, if I get a patch.
It could be a characteristic of that vehicle, in which case that's the way the design turned out, and they can't do anything about it. So that is entirely possible that it'll never change.
But okay, if it's software, it could be changed eventually.
If somebody offers a software modification.
Now, let me ask you a question. And, Don, thank you very much for the call. Are there often situations in newer cars where you'll get a notice from the dealer saying, we've got a critical software update, come on in?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
And not even critical, just to remedy either complaints or certain operating characteristics that the factory feels can be improved by changing the software.
So Don should complain, or at least make a note of this, to Dodge.
Yeah, and you could also, Don, is Don still on the line?
No, but he's still listening.
Yeah, he could always call the factory, you know, call not the dealership, but Chrysler, and just ask them if there's anything else they have in the pipeline that can remedy this. And they might say, yeah, we got software coming out. Can you wait a month? Who knows?
You know, it occurs to me that with all the computer systems in all the cars, and it's all computers now.
It is.
In the old days, it was mechanical and pneumatic and everything else.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a situation where a rogue programmer threw a virus into an operating system on a vehicle?
Very good thought, because cars are now starting to communicate via satellites.
Yeah.
And at some point, it's entirely possible that somebody could concoct a virus or a program that will affect cars on the road. It's not in the realm of being impossible.
And it's a frightening prospect.
It definitely could be.
So I guess a car will need 2 firewalls.
Yeah, that's a great one. The one in front of your feet and the one at the satellite.
Indeed. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Yeah, it's automotive questions today. We'll take a break. We'll be back.
Support comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. SPAC, presenting the final week of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, Sunday, August 24th, with a tribute to the great composers of France, and August 26th features Beethoven, Brahms, and Sintakis. SPAC.org. Taft Farms, Great Barrington, now harvesting pesticide-free vegetables from their 200-acre IPM farm, sweet corn, berries, and 75 varieties of heirloom tomatoes. Open daily, taftfarms.com. And NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Ray Graff here. You there? We pick up the phones with John in the Hudson Valley. John. Oh, John, you got to turn that phone down, Bubba.
All right, baby.
All right, hang on just a minute, man. All right, turn it down.
Okay.
John, you're gonna have to call back, I'm afraid. Tell you what, Mike, if John calls back and the line sounds clear, put him at the front. We'll get you in there, John. Dave in Pittsfield. Dave, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm calling in regards to a 1990 Honda Accord LX. It's got about 70,000 miles on it, and it stays in the garage for a long period of time. That's why it's got so little miles. And my concern is the timing belt. To my understanding, I was told that if the timing belt goes, that the engine will have a lot of problems, unlike the timing belts years ago, if it snapped, you just coasted to a stop. Is there any way I can check that timing belt without having it all taken apart?
Yeah, that's a good question. We get that a lot, and it's very critical. The timing belt on your Accord, actually, your vehicle has two timing belts under the covers. One runs what's called a balance shaft belt, and the other one runs the camshaft. And if the little belt on the balance shaft breaks, the engine doesn't stop running. But the big one, if it breaks, the pistons will hit any open valves and do pretty heavy damage to the engine. So you definitely don't want to have that happen. You've gone way past the recommended time to change the belt, even though your miles are very low, because that belt has been under the cover since the car was built.
Right.
And it is a belt. It's made out of rubber and fibers and other materials in there, but it will deteriorate and it will crack and it can lose its teeth and then strip or break, and then it's big trouble for the engine. So, yes, there is a way to check and look at it. It doesn't give you all the information you need, but if somebody were to take the upper timing cover off and look at that belt very carefully, get in there with a flashlight and roll it around, you may see some nasty cracking going on, but I think because of the sheer age of the car, and what year did you say it was again?
1990.
Yeah, you really should get this job done because the belt's on borrowed time.
Is it a project to do that?
Yeah, it's a fairly lengthy job on that because, again, you have two belts under there. Your water pump needs to be changed, and any of the there's two tensioners involved there. You need to change those two while the whole thing's apart. So it's a fairly big job, but if you don't do it and the belt breaks, it curtains. Oh, it's way more than three, four, five times the expense. Probably.
So you could warp the engine? Is that the issue?
Well, you'll bend a bunch of valves, and now you've got a car that's in great shape, but it's that old, and the shop says it's $4,000, or whatever.
Yeah.
So the water pump should be changed?
Yes.
And the two tensioners?
Yeah, do everything and then you don't do it again.
Right. How much is something like that cost?
The $24,000 question.
That price is going to vary greatly wherever you call, but if I had to give you a range, $600, $700, $800, it depends on, and there might be a few other items that need attention while it's apart, but that's the kind of job you're looking at.
Somebody that can work on cars, they, a backyard mechanic, they can do that, right?
Well, if you're going to take it to somebody like that, just quiz them a little bit. Make sure they've done these and are okay with it. You don't want it in the wrong hands, and then the job goes wrong, and then he says, gee, I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden all your valves are bent. Yeah. So, be careful.
there's probably a lineup hole where you can put a pin in or a nail or something to keep everything in line.
Well, on that car there isn't. There's just timing marks to be aware of.
Marks. So it'd be critical to mark it actually before you take it apart.
It's a very good idea.
Yeah. Soapstone or something. Yeah. Very good. Well, thank you very much, Gordon. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Dave, thanks for the call. It is Vox Pop on WAMC. One open line, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Bernadette in New Paltz. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi. I'm so happy you're on. I have a Mazda MPV. It's a 2002. It's been recalled for the cooling fan modules, and I've been reading on Googling that they're replaced quite often. But the one I had mine replaced under warranty, and the mechanic told me that the fan wasn't working. The air conditioning fan was working, but the motor fan wasn't working. So I went and got another module. It's a aftermarket part. It was installed by a mechanic. And what's been going on is that when you turn the ignition key on, where the lights on the dashboard go on, the fan goes on, whether it's cold or hot. And it stays on until you shut the car off. And I didn't know, he never took the battery out, but I didn't know if maybe you're supposed to reboot the computer or if there's something else wrong or if the module's defective.
Yeah. So what you're saying is the radiator cooling fan is on the minute you turn the key on.
Yeah.
Yep.
You don't even have to start the car up. It just goes on.
Yep. That cooling fan is controlled. What year is your car? It's not on
it's
the paper.
It's a 2002 MPV.
Okay, yeah. I think that car, the cooling fan, is still operated by a relay rather than by the computer. And it's very possible that relay is stuck on. Mm. Something is requesting that fan to be on all the time when it shouldn't be. And you definitely should get that solved because those fans really are not made to be on continuously the whole time the car is running. They're on demand.
Yeah.
The fans come on as needed. If you hopped in your car and drove to Buffalo, that fan would never come on until you slowed down to the point where the engine warmed up to the point where it needed the fan.
Ah.
But if you drove that car now to Buffalo, that fan's running the whole time. So it's going to burn the fan out.
Yeah.
So you should get that taken care of.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernadette. I remember one of our vehicles in my family, there was an issue where the fan went on, and then regardless of whether the key was in the ignition and the car was on, that fan was running.
Yes. Well, a lot of those fans do stay on after the key is shut off and taken out to prevent the engine from heat soaking.
Right.
So you can walk away from your car on a super hot day and hear the fan run, and you can even hear the fan come on after you shut it off.
Because, oh, that's interesting.
Because the temperature crept up after you stopped it, and then it'll run for 3, 4, 5 minutes, and that's not abnormal on a lot of cars.
Well, this was a module defect. In other words, it stayed on. It would have stayed on until the battery was running out.
And that's another problem, because sometimes the modules fail on, and that will stay on until the battery dies. So you're absolutely right.
All right, here's one via email from Mike in Hudson. Hi, Ray and Gordon. My right rear directional is out. I've changed the bulb and directional control relay with no success. Next step would be body control module, but hoping there's a cheaper fix. All other lights are working. There would be a code if it was the body module, though, right?
Well, maybe. Does it tell you on the email what kind of car we have?
No, it does not. Okay. And I should say that if you are emailing or tweeting or whatever, give us the make and model and year. That helps.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what I would do first before I got involved with modules and stuff is with a 12-volt test light, turn that failing blinker on with the bulb out and probe the connections inside the bulb socket and see if your test light is flashing the way it's supposed to.
So you're getting voltage.
Yes, you're getting the positive voltage to that bulb. And then you need to go and reverse your test light and check the negative part of it to see if that socket is getting its proper ground.
Mm.
Because it could have a simple bad connection at either the socket or the wires connect to it.
I've had corrosion issues.
Yeah, that's what it could be.
At the junction box itself where the fuse itself was corroded, the socket was corroded, and then things don't work.
Yeah, and if we knew how old the car was, that would be very likely, to be a cause.
Okay, so, let's go to Diane and Saugerties. Hi, Diane, you're on.
Hi. I was looking at a truck to buy, a used truck, a 2005 Chevy Colorado. I really liked the truck, but when I looked, and it was making a little noise when we turned the steering wheel to the right. So we looked underneath it when it was parked, and the tie rod was hitting something. I don't know what it is, but it was somewhere between bumping up against, just touching and rubbing against some vertical rod that was there,
mm-hmm.
on the right and the left. And so I hesitated to buy it because I didn't know what that was. But it just didn't seem right that metal should be touching metal.
So when you noticed this after, when you turned the wheels to the extreme right or the extreme left, that's when you saw these?
Yeah, I don't even know that it was extreme, but yeah, pretty far to the right or left.
Yeah. There shouldn't be any steering or suspension components contacting each other, but maybe something in there is worn or broken. And maybe what you saw were sway bar links possibly broken and flopping around where they shouldn't be. Are there a lot of miles on this vehicle?
90,000.
Yeah. Are you still looking at it, or?
Yeah, I would like to be.
Yeah.
But see, people haven't called me back. Yeah. I don't know if they sold it.
What would not be nice is to get somebody's eyes under there. This is probably sold privately, so you can't take it anywhere. Is it on the road? Is it registered?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You should get somebody's eyes under there to see what you're describing, and it may not be that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
The sway bar could be a big deal.
Well, not in the worst. That's not the worst thing, though, really. You know, in the
expense wise,
well,
but you don't want the wheels to.
Yeah, and if those sway bar links are broken, sometimes they can get out and get into the tire, so it's definitely worth looking into, and then you can get a handle on what that type of repair might cost. But
touching metal is not right.
No, there's nothing in there that should be doing that ordinarily. Mm-hmm. So there's something going on, worn or broken under there that you should have looked at.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Diane. 1-800-348-2551. Ray Graff here. Right across is Gordon Fricke. He's the expert. Lynn in North Adams. Lynn, you're on.
Hi. I recently bought a 94 Honda Civic, and it's already presenting some problems I wanted to talk to you about.
Okay.
All right.
So when I accelerate, it takes a minute for the car to shift in gear, and it gives this very strange, like, grinding noise, and I'm wondering, while I've taken it through a mechanic, no one's ever given me a real direction on what that would be.
All right, Lynn, is this an automatic transmission?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you start the car up, you put it in drive, and you step on the accelerator. Is that when you get this big delay?
Both times, whether I'm just starting the car or whether I'm already, like, in motion, especially on the highway, it takes forever to get up to 65.
And when it's doing that, is the engine struggling? Is it revving up like crazy? You noticing the tachometer really high?
Not so much. It doesn't rev up too badly.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it anyway.
Well, you may not have a transmission issue. You might have something with the engine that's causing it not to have the power it should. Do you have a ton of miles on this thing?
Yeah, about 177.
Yeah. A lot of times when we see full throttle, takes forever to accelerate, doesn't shift, it shifts very late. Sometimes we find plugged exhaust systems, mainly the catalytic converters, causing that problem. But I wouldn't just go jump into that because it needs to be diagnosed. But a lot of transmission, quote, problems are the result of the engine not developing the power that it should, and the transmission is only reacting to that low power. So I think you need to get it somewhere where somebody can go for a test drive with you and you explain or show them what it's doing. And then you'll have a better handle on it.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Lynn. Now, can you develop long-term transmission issues if, for instance, your exhaust system is depriving you of power?
No, because the transmission is only responding to the amount of power the engine's producing.
So you can't damage it?
Not really. If that engine is, let's say that engine normally makes 200 horsepower, and now all of a sudden it's down to 100, the transmission doesn't know the difference other than saying, wow, we got to shift later and do different things to accommodate the power we're being delivered.
Mm. Now, catalytic, you'd mentioned it may be dirty. Is that something that once it's clogged, you have to replace it, or can you clean it out? I know they can be pricey.
Yeah, if it's plugged to the point where you're having power issues, it's gone.
Okay.
But there are some products that do have some results at cleaning converters, but it's more for a mild buildup of deposits.
So get it early.
Yeah.
And they're full of, platinum or some sort of heavy metal?
Yeah, it's a honeycomb mesh of ceramic coated with precious metals.
Mm. Yeah, so that's why sometimes they get stolen.
Because they're precious.
Indeed. All right, Patricia in Woodstock. Patricia, you're on.
Hi, thanks. Thank you. Sure. My question is, I have a 2000 Honda Civic, and the timing belt was changed at 70,000 miles, and I'm wondering if I need to change it again, and at how many miles would I need to change it?
All right, on your 2000 Civic, I don't remember. I think the interval on those cars might have been every 90,000 miles or certain number of years. So if you had it changed at 70,000, how many miles do you have on it now?
About 165.
All right. Yeah, you're getting close to the next interval. But what I would do to be sure is if there's an owner's manual in the car, see what the interval is on mileage. I think they were 90,000 mile change intervals.
As the second, in other words, the second change, should you go more conservatively and have it done earlier, or doesn't it matter?
It doesn't matter as long as everything was changed the first time around. And when I say everything, sometimes owners of cars and even mechanics are reluctant to suggest or do all the moving parts, and you do just the belt. If you do just the belt, now your tensioners, your pulleys, and if your water pump is driven by the belt, they now have, if you had, she did it, say, at 70, now she's got 160 on it. Those other components are on their last legs.
Yeah.
But if you do it properly, the intervals don't change. You can do it every 90,000 miles. So I think you're getting close, but I would look at your manual to be sure, because you might be at a 90,000-mile interval.
You know, I looked in the manual. It didn't give any specific amount of miles.
It should be in there, and if you don't see it in the owner's manual, I think you can get on a website and search that out, and you'd find that information.
Make sure it's an official site, though.
Yes.
There are a lot of people who think they know an awful lot.
You can't believe everything on the Internet, can you?
No, you can't. Thanks, Patricia.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Let's go to Frank and Latham before we take a break. Frank.
Yes. Hi, I'm enjoying your show. I've got a 2008 Tundra. I bought it new.
Okay. Are you still there?
I am.
Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
Yep. I think you got that part. It's the 4.7 liter. I bought it new. It's got about 52,000 miles on it now. Ever since it was new, it had this quirk with the accelerator where you'd step on the accelerator and nothing would happen. You'd step on it a little more and it would lurch forward. It's always done that. I got a notice. I brought it in three separate times over the course of the warranty. They said they put a shim in it, they put a fix in it. This is all during the same time Toyota was having this accelerator issue.
Okay. Yeah.
And now it's out of warranty. It's still doing it. Now, if I'm pulling something or I've got a heavy load in it, you don't notice it because you've got to press on the accelerator a little more to get going anyway. This is just from stop. And it's to the point where I have to tell other people about it before they borrow my truck or drive my truck because it's a surprise.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, has anyone else figured out what's going on with that? Otherwise, the truck is perfect.
Yeah, that's an interesting scenario because that truck is throttled by wire, as are just about all vehicles now. So there's no direct link between you and the engine anymore when you're pressing on the accelerator pedal.
And they cited that as a problem, saying there's a flat spot on the transmitter or a flat spot on the receiver or something like that. And they said they replaced it, they shimmed it, they've done this, they've done that, but it never really took care of it, and I'm just living with it.
Well, there's an additional scenario that we run into that is non-electronic, and it has to do with the throttle plate itself, and that's on the engine. And that's what your throttle cable used to be connected to. And that can be subject to carbon and sludge buildup, and that plate gets hard to move.
Even on a 2008?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It doesn't take that many miles sometimes.
Yeah. But this was doing it when it had 1,000 miles.
Yes, I know you said that. What I would do is be sure that the throttle plate is not getting gummed up, and it's not that big of a deal to thoroughly clean that. The other thing is I would see if there's any new software, unless you already have checked, to see if Toyota's gotten a better handle on that, because they definitely don't want this happening, like you said, with all those issues they had with pedals and transducers and all that.
Yeah.
But check, make sure the throttle plates aren't gummed up.
All right, now there's some stuff I can spray in there to clean that up, ungum it, or do I take it to a service?
Well, they make a cleaner that you can use yourself. Just, you know, don't overdo it and read the instructions and go in there with a rag and clean that throttle plate and the bore up. And
okay.
That helps a lot. We do run into this.
Okay, Frank, thanks a lot. We'll take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop. Gordon Fricke here. We'll hit the home stretch in a moment.
Support comes from Carrie Haddad Gallery, presenting playful, colorful works on wood, plaster, and Play-Doh through September 21st, open daily. CarrieHaddadGallery.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. Foresight Land Services. For over 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. And Lennox Plastic Surgery and Skin Center of BMC, plastic reconstructive and hand surgery and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santamarina. BerkshireHealthSystems.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is here from Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. A lot of calls today. Let's go back to the phones. Mike in Lee, Mass. Mike, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I got a 99 F-250. It's got 204,000 miles on it. I've been taking care of this truck. I got it last year. It had probably 150,000 on it. I plow with it. You know, it's a work truck. It's in very good shape mechanically, but recently in the last maybe 3 months, I've been noticing it's shifting a lot more. So I did a transmission filter change and a fluid change and everything. Even going up the slightest of hills, anywhere from 50 to 75 miles an hour, it's got 1-2 drive and then overdrive. It shifts like it's towing something. I've had the brakes checked. I've checked out the brakes. Nothing's dragging, nothing panging up. It's just shifting a lot more under the minorest conditions. Somebody told me throttle position sensor might be the issue, but I'd rather get as much info as I can before I actually go start throwing money at this.
All right.
Sure. Do you feel that the truck has the same amount of power as it has the whole time?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Because we were talking earlier, there was a call regarding a transmission, and if your engine starts to lose some power for whatever reason, age, you know, compression sneaking down, plugged exhaust, the transmission will react to that. It doesn't know the difference. It just knows that it's not doing what you want it to, and
okay.
it'll shift down more often because it doesn't have the power being delivered to it that it normally does.
All right.
So the condition of the engine is always in question, and that means, you know, maybe the compression is starting to dip down because of the mileage, which is, at this point, nothing you really are probably going to do anything about. That being said, you want to make sure you got a good air cleaner, you got good spark plugs, all the usual things that have to do with what makes the engine run.
Okay.
The transmission's shifting up and down too suddenly. You know, if it was a throttle position sensor, it's possible, but it's very, very hard to determine. You're going to have to get it somewhere where they can go out on the road with a scan tool connected to it and just see if everything is making sense. If you're pushing the gas pedal down halfway and the throttle position sensor is reading 80%, yes, it's overreacting because it thinks you're pressing harder on the gas pedal than you really are.
Okay, well, that question right there, that statement right there, there's sometimes where I'm going up a hill and I'll put the throttle right to the floor and the sound of the engine won't even change. Like, it's not like it's not reading that I just opened the throttle.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm doing it right where I'm driving it right now, and it just shifted now. But, I mean, I had my foot right to the floor, and it didn't read it for a good 10 seconds.
And what was the engine sounding like? Like you were wide open?
No, it said it was sounding normal, and then all of a sudden it just shifted and went right to $3,000, and good to go.
Is this a 5.4 liter?
Yes, sir. Yeah, the Triton.
You could, the last caller had a situation where I recommended he make sure that the throttle plates were nice and clean. I'm not sure if that truck, being that age, has throttle by wire, though. I think, do you have a cable going to the throttle?
Yeah, no, it's cable because there was, I had an issue with my cruise control, and I still do. The cruise control says everything's working on it, but it's not, it doesn't take control. So that's another reason somebody said it was a throttle position sensor, because everything else is working but the cruise control.
Yeah.
So.
Some other things that come to mind that require pretty heavy diagnosis, but partially plugging catalytic converters will rob power from the engine, and it'll make the transmission shift more because it's reacting. So I couldn't pinpoint anything because, you know, you're in the early stages of something going on there.
But get it checked now.
I think so. It'd be a good idea.
Mike, thank you very much. Let's go to Irene in Plymouth, Mass. Irene, you're on.
Hello. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Call is almost like the other lady who said, what happens with the warranty on my car? At 98,000 miles, I had the catalytic converter replaced. I had the head gasket replaced. And supposedly Subaru in Burlington, Vermont, and Twin States in the middle of Vermont, and then another Subaru dealership out in Plymouth, replaced everything, but now the car has 140,000 miles. So my one question is, do I have to go through replacing all of that again? The car's working great. I'm just trying to think, do I want to keep a 2004 Subaru that I love and go through all of that repair? You know, how do I prepare?
Yeah. At what mileage did it need all that stuff?
98,000.
And what do you have on it now for miles?
140.
Okay. It's a very good question because you may, if you hit 200,000 miles, maybe these things will reoccur. The head gasket situation probably won't because Subaru recognized they had a weakness and they improved the gasket materials.
Mm-hmm.
The catalytic converters, if they were replaced by a dealer, then you got top quality catalytic converters. And around those years, Subaru, I believe, had some reprogramming that calmed down the computer's tolerance for the catalytic converter efficiency. So I don't think I would be terribly worried, really, because let's say you hit 185,000 miles and your check engine light comes on and they read that it's a PO420 code, which is your converter efficiency, at that point you've gotten so much use out of this car, why not just keep driving it? And I don't think I'd be overly worried about those things reoccurring because you may, when you get close to that mileage, you might say, well, it's been a wonderful car, the seat's worn out, and I'm going to get another one.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
And then I have a second question.
Sure.
Thanks for your first answer. That was good. When they replaced the catalytic converter, I was under a 2004 zero air emission rules in Massachusetts, and so Subaru had to pay for replacement of the catalytic converter. If they had to repair the catalytic converter again, would they have to pay for it again?
Only if it failed to perform during the replacement part warranty that the federal government mandates.
Okay.
And probably in Massachusetts, it's 5 year, 50,000.
Okay.
That's my guess.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Irene. And the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Ray Graff here. Gordon Fricke is our automotive expert. Kathy in Longmeadow, Mass. Kathy, you're up.
Oh, yes. Hi.
Hi.
I have a new, it was 9 months old, a Ford C-Max hybrid. And when we bought it, we were told that it doesn't have a spare tire, but they have a plug system that you can plug something if the tire goes wrong. And we were told that this is what the cars are all going to, et cetera. And we never checked to see. And I've already had like four, in 9 months, I've had four different times where my tire got a nail in it or a screw or something. Well, where we live, they're doing a lot of construction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a big, huge, you know, screw in it in one tire. And the other tire, about 8 weeks later, got another screw in it. And a couple of nails in different ones. So this is something that does bother me. And I wondered if this is pretty true, that other cars are going to this too, and this is where we're at.
Yeah, you know, that is the case with some vehicles, and a lot of it's due to space constraints. They're making cars that don't have room for spares.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it saves the car manufacturer the cost of a tire, a wheel, a jack, a wrench, all the stuff that goes with it.
Right.
What they were doing in some cars is putting run flat tires on the car. And those tires can take a nail or anything, and you can run them X number of miles flat.
Completely flat?
Well, they don't go flat. They only go down about 2 inches, and then they hit a super hard sidewall.
I see.
But those
I think I heard this somewhere, and I think they told me that I don't have run flat.
So what does Ford have in your car in case you have a flat, did you say? A kit?
There's a kit underneath one of the seats that I have not taken out yet. What I've done is I call AAA and I get in the truck with the guy and go to a station.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's very inconsoling, and you know, it's a little scary at night driving if you don't have a spare. The other thing online, I saw that some person got a tire for his wife, because they didn't have a spare with the car. That it was like he said a Ford Focus, I think it was, but I'm not sure. And he leaves it in the back of the car.
Yeah, that was the other option. I have had people do that where they will get a spare wheel and tire that will fit your car. Sometimes you can buy them right from the factory. But you'll want to get a jack and a wrench in case you don't have anybody that can change it. And then you got to carry the stuff around in the trunk or the hatchback of the car. But at least you have a spare tire with the vehicle to ease your mind. The other thing you could do is carry a couple of cans of Stop Leak that sprays into the tire. And if you take a nail, that will seal it up, and you can get home on a can of Fix-A-Flat.
Okay, so
that also inflates the tire?
Yeah, the Fix-A-Flat will inflate the tire and pump a sealant in there, and that will seal the hole and get you home.
Amazing.
So that's another option.
So inflates the tire?
Yep. Yeah,
and it stops the leak.
Yeah, it's in a big, tall can. You can buy it at any auto parts store and probably a whole bunch of other big retail stores.
It's called Stop Leak?
Fix-A-Flat is the trade name. That's probably a brand name, but that'll get you there if you ask for that.
Oh, my. That sounds good.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Because I have another friend who just, we were talking the other night, and he has a C-Max, too. And I said, well, I don't have a spare tire. And he said, oh, you're kidding. He said, well, you have a spare tire. And he went out back, and he was like, we don't have a spare tire.
Oh, boy.
Get two cans of Fix-A-Flat.
That's a great, one for a friend. Kathy.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you so much.
Bye now. Let's go to Norbert in Montague, New Jersey. Norbert, you're on.
Hi. I have a 1991 Accord, and the thing sometimes will start, and other times it just turns over like it's going to start, but it doesn't do anything. And a friend of mine told me that if there's a clip that you can put a paper clip into and get some readings to tell you what the problem is. So I put the clip in, and the check engine light comes on, but it stays on. It doesn't give any of the off-on that's supposed to tell you what's wrong with the thing. And so I was just wondering what that could be, that it would start up one time, and then another time just turn over like it's never going to start.
Yeah. So when it's failing to start, it's cranking and cranking and cranking and cranking like mad, but just doesn't fire up. Okay.
Correct.
Does this generally happen after you shut it off, after driving the car when it's fully warmed up? Let's say you go out.
Yes, it has done that, but then on other times it doesn't make any difference. It'll start right up.
There's a component in the distributor of that vintage Honda that created lots of trouble, and it's called an igniter, and it's Honda's term for the ignition module. And they failed a lot in the heydays of those cars. And the early symptoms were exactly what you're describing. It would crank forever and never start. If it cooled off 20 minutes, half hour, hour, then it starts like nothing ever happened.
Okay.
So I'm not saying go out and get one replaced, but that was a high failure part back then.
Igniter expensive?
Not the worst thing. They're not a giveaway, but they're not the worst thing at all. But they are in on that car. They're in the located in the distributor, and okay. We used to replace them a lot. So that would be my first stab right there.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks, Norbert. Let's go to Bonnie in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Bonnie, you're on.
Hi. Well, now that I heard a couple of the other calls, I'm a little confused. I have a 2006 Subaru Forester that is wonderful. It has 98,000 miles. It's a stick. It's garaged. Most of the time it does highway driving, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with it. However, people have been telling me, oh, expect for things to go wrong. You should either sell it now or trade it in now and get a brand new car. And not that that is the best financial decision, but how do you make that decision? They're saying, you know, there are all the new safety features. Don't start looking for all the trouble that's going to start coming.
Yeah. That's a very good car you have there.
I love it.
Yeah. And if you're happy with that car and it does everything it needs to do for you
and it gets checked on the queue all the time at the dealer.
Yeah. I wouldn't be doing anything but keeping it and abiding by the maintenance manual and keep driving it. There's no really horrible things that I'd be concerned with.
With the 2006 Forester.
Yeah, they're a great car. In that year and that mileage, people would be very happy to get that as a used vehicle. So I think I would stay maintaining the car the way you are, do everything it needs,
mm-hmm.
and unless it starts giving you trouble, it's going to tell you when it's time, and you're going to feel it. You know, you're going to say, well, I'm putting too much money in this car every month. It's time to make a move. But I don't think that time has come.
Oh, it's not a physical. It's not like the car is going to it physically feels something wrong. It's my pocketbook's going to feel something wrong.
Well, partly. And if you start having more and more breakdowns, you know, it'll drive you to change. But that car's got a lot of life left in it, believe me.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're
I
welcome.
Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Bonnie.
You know, you're spreading a lot of contentment and relaxation today. Oftentimes you're an alarmist.
This was not a bad day because the calls were not, like sometimes I've told people not to drive the car another foot.
Yeah.
But we haven't had any of those. So yes, it's been a calming day.
You've talked a lot of people off the ledge.
That's right.
I appreciate you being here. All right. Tell you what, Mike in Rotterdam, I apologize. You only have about 15 seconds to pose the question. Gordon has about 20 to answer. Go ahead.
Okay, I've got a 2001 Honda Civic with 120,000 miles in it. I had an engine noise, and I brought it to the dealer for some work, and they suggested that it was a timing belt tensioner. I asked them to let me know if they indeed found that that was the cause of the sound. Well, when they called me back, I had authorized them to go ahead and do the timing belt and the water pump and so forth, and they did so, but they did not change the timing belt tensioner, and proceeded to tell me that the noise was coming from the air conditioner pump.
Oh, boy. Well, you got 15 seconds to answer this,
yes.
Gordon.
Yes, it is very possible it is from the air conditioner, but they should not have failed to replace that tensioner. It's a critical, critical part. It's under a lot of wear and stress.
All right. Well, listen, I got to tell you, thanks to everybody who called in today. Gordon Fricke of Barber and Fricke in Hoosick Falls, a splendid job. And, again, very relaxing.
Yeah,
very,
thank you.
It was a serene program. Support comes from the United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York. Live United, give, advocate, volunteer, UnitedWayGCR.org. Kingsway Community, Schenectady, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including rehabilitation and more, caring in the family tradition, KingswayCommunity.com. Unison Arts, New Paltz, the second annual ice cream social and outdoor concert with Adirondack Creamery Ice Cream and Shorty King's Rhythm Review, Saturday, August 24th, grounds open at 3, concert at 4, unisonarts.org. And Taft Farms, Great Barrington, now harvesting pesticide-free vegetables from their 200-acre IPM farm, sweet corn, berries, and 75 varieties of heirloom tomatoes. Open daily, taftfarms.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Kimball Lipscomb, who was at the controls. Your phones were answered by Mike Allinger, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a food already. Boy, this week has flown by. It's Food Friday tomorrow.